Okay, this is going to be a challenge. I have this timer here. I have 15 minutes. I'm going to cover about 4,000 years of wargaming. So buckle your seatbelts. I have between some and a lot of footnotes, justification, evidence for a lot of things I say. Very little of that will be mentioned within 15 minutes. So if you want to know more about my assertions, there's the Q&A, and then hopefully, please, dear God, my book will finally be out before the end of the year, and that has all the footnotes and all the justification and all the rest. As several people have alluded, I've been doing this for a while now. In 1992, the Commandant of Air Command Staff College, Colonel John Warden, asked me to put on a conference. It seems to be working out so far. Very, very important. I am humbled to be here. I am humbled to be with these guys that in the United Kingdom said, let's put on a show. And we're going to do this. And literally, it was four guys that said, you know, here's a need. We have no money. We have no staff. Let's go ahead and do it anyway. And I'm very grateful for all that they have done. Same thing in the United States. Connections is very much just guys willing to volunteer. And one of the things, and as you can see as I'm talking this, I've been at it for a while. I've been doing wargaming both while I was active duty and active reserves as a civil servant, and please, my book will be out soon. As always, though, I have not retired from civil service. Several years ago, I retired from the reserves, so I tell people I'm barely retired. But I'm still active as a civil servant, so anything I say has to start with this disclaimer. And again, these are very much my opinions. Okay, so one of the big problems that I think all of us have in wargaming is that we all work in democracies, we all have bosses, our bosses all want to see proof that the money and the resources, and especially the time of their subordinates that's going into wargaming is having some payoff. And so I've lost count of the number of times that I've heard somebody say, okay, point to a particular wargame on a particular day that saved this amount of money, or, you know, saved five or seven lives or something like that. And there's several problems with that. A lot of times a wargame won't create a payoff for years or decades. You know, some of the wargames that indicated that, gosh, maybe the British should have an expeditionary force in France quickly after the beginning of a war with Germany might be a good thing and might have an effect on World War I. That didn't have any impact for 9 years, but yet it's probably most historians agree that's why the Schlieffen plan failed. Your expeditionary force was in the wrong place at the right time. Another problem is a lot of the near-term stuff is classified. And then the final problem is that very few people make a decision for one reason. I was sitting as close to the Chief of Staff of the Air Force as Phil is sitting to me, and I heard him say, based on an outcome of a war game, he was going to give himself a note to restore funding to an organization. But he said, when I first heard about it, I had a bad feeling. I had my staff look into it, and now this war game has confirmed what I thought I believed to begin with. Well, that's three bits of information. You can't really chalk it up just to the war game. So what this talk is going to be about is taking a much bigger view. I'm going to cover 4,000 years in a short period of time. Basically, what we're going to do is by looking at the historical record, does wargaming provide an edge? If it does provide an edge, what are some of the things in the past that seems to help have produced that edge? And then what are the measures we can do today that might help that edge be present for us? But first, let's talk about edges. Normally, when I have more time, I invite the folks in the audience to participate in a thought experiment where you're all rulers of Greek city-states. You have the same technology, the same sociology, you have a militia force, and I'd ask people to call out, well, how do you get an edge? Because And your populations are roughly the same size, because a city-state is how far people can walk in a day. So they have about the same amount of arable land, pretty close to the same population. So how do you get an edge? And somebody will say training, and somebody will say get allies so you don't have the same number of soldiers. And somebody will come up with something else. And we'll talk about all those, and those are all valid edges, and none of them are decisive. Now, Sparta had the best training, and yet it lost at least once. Athens tended to have a larger force, but they lost. You know, it was the key navy strength. Well, Athens had naval strength. So one of the things that you see as you look at the subject of edges is that edges have, it's good to have more people than your enemy. It's good to have more technology than your enemy. But no one edge is decisive. It's really the net effect of all edges. And superiority in wargaming is just one edge like any other edge. And it can be overcome by people having superiority in other ways. So if you look at the first generation of wargaming, and wargaming is literally as old as civilization. There are people in this room that know much more about archaeology than I do. They say that civilization started with the founding of cities, and one of the leading contenders for first city is Ur, in today's Iraq. A war game was found in archaeological dig within Ur. So these go back a long way. There seems to be a correlation between civilizations and wargaming. There seems to be a correlation of great leaders and being big fans of war games. Supposedly Elizabeth I was one of the best chess players in Europe, but it's a long time ago and hard to say, and even I'm not sure I want to go out on that limb. If we become a little bit more closer to today's time, the Germans invented modern simulation war games. You can say they invented it in 1811 or 1821, but they invented it. And if you look at the German Wars of Unification, they had a monopoly, and they won against enemies with more soldiers, with better technology, in a better position. You know, it's hard to explain those wars. And certainly wargaming was not the only edge the Germans had, but it was a big part of their success. When you come into World War I, Germany seemed to still have an edge in wargaming. The edge had shrunk because a lot of other nations started doing wargaming. I have a chart in a larger briefing that lists the years that different nations started wargaming. I point out, yes, there is a correlation between the year a nation is defeated by Germany and the year they start wargaming. But Germany still had an edge, but they were beaten anyway. When you look at early World War II, there was a great book written by three American PhDs about how England and France would defeat Hitler with just tertiary help from the United States. Great graphics, great arguments written in 1940. Didn't turn out the way that the PhDs thought it would. And one of the reasons for that is, if you think about, Germany shouldn't have won. They had less population. They had lost most of their gold reserves in World War I. You know, how are they going to get oil? And a lot of it is acting on the insights of the war games. But the war games and what they contributed to the development of Blitzkrieg and wolf packs, you know, gave them a big edge early in the war. Later in the war, we diminished that edge. You're going to hear about the wargaming done right here in the United Kingdom and the Western approaches. We had other wargaming work where we caught up some in wargaming. They were probably ahead in wargaming through the end of the war, but we had more edges in other areas. So their wargaming edge shrunk and other areas overcame it. Early in the Cold War, the Soviets probably had an edge in wargaming. It was kind of like the space race. We didn't know there was a space race into Sputnik. We probably never knew there was a competition in wargaming, but we passed them by anyway. And then in the first Gulf War, Iran versus Iraq, Iraq had much better wargames than Iran. In the Gulf War, we had much better wargaming. I think we may have had a couple of other edges too. So that probably wasn't decisive. So wargaming can provide an edge on a national level to national capabilities. Speed up. So what are some of the things that contributed to the edge? In the first time period, they had a monopoly. Nobody else did any wargaming at all. So it was new method, new application, use in their war college, use nationally. The war colleges taught people how to do war gaming. They didn't use war games to teach. They taught people how to war game after graduation. That was going to be their job after graduation. In the period leading up to World War I, though, a lot of other people copied German methods, in some cases even improved it. The Germans didn't stay still. They made some improvements, but their advantage shrunk. And so we were better able to overcome that advantage with other ways. When we get into the early interwar period, much greater breadth of wargaming. The Germans maintained their staff officers and their armed forces. A lot of those guys were broken down to much lower ranks. So through World War I, a lot of the wargaming was done at the corps level and not below, dependably. After World War I, you had these guys that were generals and colonels that were now, you know, majors and lieutenant colonels doing wargaming at the level that they now commanded. So there was wargaming much more throughout the German armed forces. And you also had the application to doctrinal development, to weapons optimization. They were able to figure out what characteristics they wanted in their submarines before they had submarines. And then some new techniques, really explicitly playing red, where they tried, not in their field war games, but in their paper war games, trying to make sure the people who played France followed French doctrine and all the rest. So a lot of real big improvements in wargaming. When you get to the World War II period, again, we started closing the gap, operations research, the great use of science advisors, some of the new applications. So the German edge became much smaller, but it probably still existed to the end of the war. And then in the period from 1946 for a while, Russia probably had the advantage in wargaming. They spent a huge amount of money gathering an incredible amount of detail on the Great Patriotic War. So when they had combat results table of what were your odds of crossing a river in a certain period of time, they used the actual historical data. And so probably in the 50s, at least, 50s, maybe into the 60s, Russia had an advantage and we didn't know it. But we pulled ahead of them. RAND Corporation came up with a bunch of ways to wargame air power better and other ways too. After the Vietnam War, there was a feeling in our war colleges, or excuse me, in armed forces, never again would we fight a war like we fought in Vietnam. So it was put war back into our war colleges. CENTCOM did a lot more wargaming. DARPA came up with DARPANET that allowed us to network simulators so you could have wargaming on that level. And then, of course, so how do you extend an edge? Well, again, talking really fast, one way you do is to extend the breadth of wargaming. One of the things the Germans did in the interwar period is they wargamed all elements of national power. So they would have the Krupsen for their wargames. How long would it take you to build up the industrial capability? They would bring in people from foreign ministry and everything else. Greater breadth. That Germany increased the effectiveness of their wargaming in the interwar period because they did it far below the core level, much more granular, saw weapons characteristics and all the rest. New techniques are also very important. You know, I have here a way that's going to keep me from going very much over the time, and I carry it in my pocket. Why can't we carry war games in our pockets? Some old applications, new again. Doctrinal development is something that was done in the 20s and the 30s through wargaming. We can certainly do that again. Weapons optimization. There's a lot of things that are possible to build. More things are possible to build than we'll ever have the time and money to, which things will have the greatest impact. And again, the Germans were able to anticipate that. And here in the United Kingdom, you were able to anticipate that before the end of the war. So are we expanding our edge or not? I don't know. There's been very little written about Chinese wargaming, but there has been a little bit, and it was enough to worry me a little bit. Tom got a chance to go over there and talk to them, and his comments were a little bit reassuring. Perhaps they're better on paper than in reality, I got nothing on wargaming by Russia. Zero. I have a fair amount of information on how the Soviets wargamed, but how has that evolved since 1990? I do not know. So in summation, that's the end of my talk. So thank you very much. I did it.